Shoot, I took a bite of an apple at the worst possible time. Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this flowing dystopia. It's episode number 291 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag examines Dak's shoulder injury. At 12:30, the NBA draft is tonight. Where can you expect former Longhorns to go, and what can we expect the Texas teams to do? And in mere minutes, has Bob Bowlsby got a story for you? And Quinn Ewers is involved with some pretty big news. I'm Trey Edling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Oh, you're damn right. Now I've got three things to get to before the show starts. You know that I don't determine that moment, right? I want to make sure everybody understands this. It's not like I have a starter pistol and I fire it off and you ate the piece of the apple. Like, that was, you timed that out wrong for yourself, correct?
Oh, it was a total mistake by me. I am not denying that.
But once again, the other day it was you challenged yourself with a weird little run before you started talking. Today it was the apple. I thought you did a great job on both fronts, which brings me to the two things I need to mention today. First off, Trey Elling, have I told you lately that you're a genius? Have I told you lately?
No, you haven't been telling me enough at all.
Trey Elling, you're a genius. I am so interested in today's show for a variety of reasons. Yesterday, Trey tells me, hey, man, and we can interview Stuart Mandel if you want. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, of course. Let's see what he wants. Let's see what he thinks of college football. We'll replay that interview for you at 1:05. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. You'll want to be around for that. Then he tells me in the 2 o'clock hour, one of my favorite guys of all time that I got to work with, we've gotten to work with in radio, the legendary Tyler Coe, a man who is in the bass club. When he speaks, you'll want to put bass in your own voice because he's got that cool, low, badass voice. He's coming in the 2 o'clock hour. Apparently, he's got a new podcast he's starting. We'll talk to him about that. He's a massive Longhorn fan. I get to look him in the face and say, dude, your team's going to the SEC. What are you thinking? So that's coming up at 2. So thanks to Trey for that. And Trey made a good idea even better when I said, hey, NBA draft's coming up. Longhorns could go. In fact, one Longhorn probably goes for sure, and a couple more could be drafted. Why don't we get Isaiah Collier from B&E on the show, like 12:30 or 12:45, to talk about it? Trey, in his brilliance, texts me back and says, won't Stephen hang the whole hour? And he said, yes, Isaiah Collier's in the house. What's up, man?
What's happening? What's happening? Thanks for having me on, fellas.
And if I'm being completely honest about the setup of today's show, guys, this is my attempt to do as little work as possible. So thank you both. Thank you both.
No, thank you for setting it all up. Isaiah is also a member of that bass club where when he talks, you kind of feel the need to maybe bass it out a little bit. Have you found that over your life where people want to, they're trying to match you at that low register?
Let's just say my pops listened to a lot of Barry White growing up. You know what I'm talking about? That was the jams, and I love Barry. I love that low type of voice. You remember in Boys to Men? Me and Buck were talking about this earlier because Buck's always jamming at 4:30 in the morning. He's always jamming, kind of gets him going. And he had Boys to Men going, and Boys to Men had that one brother with that really low tone.
Yes.
That, like, he always just talked. He never, like, I guess he sang. He had to sing, but he just came in and was like, hey, ladies.
Hey, baby, you know I'll always make love to you.
Yeah, classic. Right.
Okay, so give me this. Give me, hey, baby, I'm so sorry. I never should have left you. Give me that.
Hey, baby, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have left you.
Exactly.
Come on now.
That's what it is. Right in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
And then, what was the guy that, the not that that band had a true lead singer, but is it Wanye Morris? Was that the guy's name that those notes?
I never knew the guys individually.
The contrast of those two was what made that act so special to me, because you'd go from that, I never should have done you wrong. And then he would hit. And then when he'd go after those high notes, that was amazing. So Isaiah Collier is in the studio with us. I wanted to talk some NBA draft with him. Plus, we'll talk Longhorns. And we got football stories to get into today.
And the real reason to get Isaiah on for the whole hour is because we all know that he is so much more than just the NBA guy. Mm-hmm. He is our resident NBA guy. But he can talk about whatever the bleep. And that includes the crazy news coming out of the Big 12 yesterday.
Yes.
And the Bowlesby 5000 spitting out a conspiracy theory that I don't think many of us saw coming.
I did not see that one coming. Just real quick, because we'll have to gloss over it multiple times today, because it is far from the best story of the day or the most interesting story of the day. Just on a personal note, I would also like to say I am proud of my university today. A&M Board of Regents met, and they approved, if you will, the vote of yes for Texas and Oklahoma coming to the SEC. The Board of Regents voted to tell the president to vote yes. So I am proud of my school for that. I think there's a certain amount of flexibility there that my people don't always show. I see your smile, Trey.
Let's not be too proud.
Look.
Doing what every other person on the planet would do.
I try to understand people for what they are and not what they're not. And I understand what my people can be. We're a very emotional, reactionary people sometimes. But I think ultimately they got to the right answer. So we can move on from that and talk about Bob Bowlesby, because you're right. That is the biggest story of the day, ultimately.
Look, all honesty, I am proud of the people of A&M also. I feel like we're hearing less sheep bleeping stories coming out of College Station than we have in a long time.
Yeah, how dare you.
It's all relative. Nobody else bleeps sheep, but you guys for some reason thought it was a good idea back in the day, but the tide may be turning now.
Yeah, so you got to knock that rust off. You got to get back in practice, because this is about to become regular again. It's about to become regular. The whole Longhorn Aggie thing, it ain't going to just be on social media very soon. It's going to actually be on the football field.
This news breaking last week, Zay, is the first time that I've really cared about sports enough to want to get emotional and engage in trash talk in a long time.
Yeah.
And it was because of A&M's initial reaction, too, but I am glad that they've finally leveled out and they're actually operating with a sort of sanity and no longer sounding like cowards in the process.
For now. That's the thing. For now. Let's see what happens when, you know, we hit the field. But, yeah, this is, you know, I'm sorry, Chad. Y'all are a petty group. And
well, we can be. We can be. But ultimately, I think they got to the right decision here. And they, look, I'm looking for sometimes minimal things in these type of stories. They did type out the words, the University of Texas, with no lowercase letters.
That's a big deal.
In bad spots.
And they said University of Texas and not Texas University?
That is correct.
Oh, man.
University of Texas. Now, did they type University of Oklahoma first? Yes, they did, but that is certainly their prerogative, and we could all understand why they might do that. Did they refer to themselves as a flagship university? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But
wait, did they say A or the?
I believe they said our flagship university.
Okay.
So you could probably pick little things apart, but I didn't feel like they got too petty. They didn't say, like, hey, a dead guy promised us. They didn't do that. They didn't type anything like that. I thought they were pretty good. And they said that ultimately this will help every member of the SEC, including Texas A&M. That's why they're saying, vote yes, Madam President.
That's great. It means it's going to be a 14-0 vote, because A&M was going to influence others to try and vote no. But again, I think they fully comprehend, and it's probably part of the reason why they released it last week, to try and get out in front and raise those objections initially before ultimately succumbing to the best way to go about this, and that's go along with the conference. You don't plan on going anywhere. You don't want to jeopardize your standing in this conference. And if the SEC has to choose between Oklahoma and Texas and A&M, they're going to choose those first two schools. I mean, it's not just a power of numbers. It's also a matter of what those brands mean in the overall scope of college athletics.
Yeah, so thankfully none of those discussions had to even get close to happening with A&M kind of backing off of all of that. So that was going to be a mild story today. But then the Big 12 comes up with a story and a gift for us in sports talk radio that I've just got to thank Bob Bowlesby for. I've now seen the live show at AT&T Stadium. I want him to tell me if anybody in my family is going to be dead. I need Bob Bowlesby to give me the info, because his weird, boring delivery somehow will make it okay. And I'm sure if he had delivered this message to me today, I would just kind of, you know, gone to sleep, wake up, and then somehow it wouldn't have been as impactful. But this is a big one because Bob Bowlesby is, to me, Trey, pulling off a world-class biting the hand that feeds you in this circumstance. Not only is he saying that Texas and Oklahoma didn't act, you know, in coordinates with the conference, let's be honest, they didn't.
Yeah, you're right about that, Bob.
He's right about that one, right? They have a bylaw. It's just like if you said, well, they've been married for 20 years, but he didn't, you know, live up to the vows. He decided to get divorced. You're right. He didn't. But stuff changes and you got to kind of be fluid. But in this case, he is accusing ESPN of being part of it. If you haven't heard, the Big 12 has sent a cease and desist letter to ESPN. Bowlesby is accusing the network of encouraging conference members in other conferences to go after these remaining Big 12 schools to poach them so that Oklahoma and Texas can go to the SEC sooner, pardon the pun there, and without paying more. That is wild. That is absolutely crazy. Isaiah, what do you make of this assertion from the Big 12?
It seems like the guy that knows he's about to get fired, so he's about to do something very dramatic before the end. Trey, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh my God.
And it seems like that type of move. It seems very desperate. It seems like he's willing to say anything to get a reaction. And I just kind of want to see where it unfolds at this point.
Is it possible, guys, that he's right? That ESPN is spurring a lot of this on? Including trying to get the AAC to grab up as many Big 12 schools as possible?
Well, if ESPN owns everything, basically all these conferences have a relationship, would this be insider trading? Is this colluding against yourself? I mean, if they're going to try to help, like let's say they help Texas get in the SEC by paying the money that they owe Texas for the Longhorn Network, just pay it directly to the Big 12. If that's what ends up happening, that's them kind of helping themselves in a way, but... Is it illegal? Is it collusion? Is it, what would you call that?
Well, I think the reason why it's interesting is because the Big 12 is not solely under the ESPN umbrella. The Big 12 still has a deal, and a big deal, with Fox right now.
True. It's a split deal, whereas the SEC's new deal is going to be all ESPN.
Exactly. Yeah. And that goes into effect in a couple of years. And I think they have most of the rights for AAC as well. And the Big Ten is obviously split up. Pac-12 does a lot with Fox, too. ACC, I think, is mostly ESPN also.
I think you're right.
ESPN is trying to push as many Big 12 schools into conferences that it has the majority or sole representation of.
So the other part of this, if you are a fan of Texas, or for that matter, A&M or Oklahoma or you know anybody kind of in the region that's not in the Big 12 anymore or about to not be in the Big 12, the extra funny part to you might be that insiders believe that one of the main conferences he's talking about is the AAC.
Right.
Not the ACC. The AAC. He thinks the AAC is trying to poach Big 12 schools from him. And I've heard some say that those two conferences might want to put their heads together.
I mean, it makes sense, especially because it seems like some of these schools may not be cut out for the Power Five in the long term.
There's also natural rivalries to be had.
With West Virginia?
No. In the AAC and the Big 12.
Oh, I see.
Like, you're already... Isn't that where the skillet game would be? That's TCU-SMU, right? SMU's in the AAC.
Good call.
So, they play it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The game is played. You could just make it a conference game. Houston, right, is
in
the AAC?
Yeah, U of H. They're in it.
They're in there. I think there could be a new sort of reimagined Southwest Conference-ish thing. You could even let West Virginia go. Ultimately, the Mountaineers need to go ACC.
Man, if I'm
like you've talked about.
If I'm Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, I am fighting that idea hard.
You're fighting letting West Virginia leave, or
no? I'm fighting the idea that we're just going to end up in the AAC because that's what ESPN is trying to do. If ESPN is trying to pull these shenanigans,
oh no, they need to take a call from Cali. Where are the Pac-12 offices? Is that LA?
Yeah, but they're considering moving them to Vegas, I believe.
Man, I'd get up as early as you want me to if you can get me out there. I saw stuff online yesterday about, you know, Baylor's not used to 9 a.m. kicks. I wouldn't care. Tell me when we are kicking.
Unfortunately,
put me in your conference.
Unfortunately for Baylor and TCU, because they have religious affiliations, there's next to no chance that they're making it to the Pac-12.
That is a weird...
Yeah, I see Baylor going AA, whatever.
Yeah, they would maybe go AAC first. Also, I wonder what happens. Does anything happen to BYU in all this mess? Because if those Big 12 religious schools can't go west... Then BYU could come to them. Like if TCU, Baylor, think about it. If you had TCU and Baylor already, and you somehow added SMU, that's three religious schools right there. And then BYU, I would assume, would be welcomed kind of into that community. If they were interested,
yeah,
they could find a home. They've been independent for a while. So I don't know where this all shakes out, but if Bob Bowlesby was like my coworker, if I was like the assistant to the commissioner, or I was his brother, or I was his wife, or I would be kind of walk. It's like, Bob, you got to walk me through this. This is the network you have a relationship with. This is the network that makes it possible for people in Kansas to watch them play a game on ESPN Plus that nobody would watch otherwise. They are the ones, and they're getting you money for that. They got each of your schools 30-something million. It won't be that anymore, but they're still willing to pay you for this year? And you're going to accuse them of something this dastardly?
Well, that's why I think the accusation has some legs to it, because the Big 12 is bent over backwards, Zay, to accommodate the ESPN, including the number of games that have ended up on ESPN Plus that aren't essentially free for anybody to watch if they have your basic cable set up.
Yeah, it's a really bad situation, and I think schools like Kansas definitely need to look at the Big Ten for basketball reasons.
Yeah. Because, I like Kansas and Iowa State to the Big Ten. What do you think about that?
Oh, I love that.
We did like
Iowa
that, right?
State, yeah. Iowa State, Iowa, that's definitely a classic matchup, and obviously being one of those Midwestern states, they would fit in the Big Ten well.
And everybody talks about Allen Fieldhouse, and they should. It is a church for that sport. It is an ultimate destination. When Hilton Coliseum is full, that's a barn now. That place that place goes. When Iowa State fans care and show up and pack that house, it's an intimidating place.
Yeah.
It can get pretty loud. It can get interesting. And that would be a great thing to add to the Big Ten, making a rivalry game an extra important conference game. Doing what Texas and OU did years ago. Let's take a rivalry game that matters to both and just crank it up a notch. Iowa and Iowa State would become a conference game? So if I'm the Big Ten, I love that idea.
Yeah, that's they could no longer be required to play that when the second week of the season, although they may still want to do that because I think that game does have a connection to the Iowa State Fair. It's not as direct a connection as Texas OU is to the Texas State Fair, but I feel like that game is always scheduled around that. So it would just be an early season conference game for both those teams. And yes, it's once again, I think if you're trying to restructure this right now, you want to find any natural rivalries possible when considering bringing a new team into the conference, whether it's the AAC with a TCU versus SMU. They could try and get something further going with Houston and Texas Tech. I know those teams have played quite a bit recently. Or in the Big Ten's case, Iowa State. I'm sure the Big Ten would love a crack at Oklahoma to resume the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry. Obviously, that's not going to happen now because the SEC is going to approve Texas and Oklahoma today. And Texas and Oklahoma, by the weekend, we may know it officially that Texas and Oklahoma at some point in the next 4 years, probably sooner rather than later, are going to accept that invitation since they're the ones that inspired it to begin with.
Remember, the Specs text line is there for you. 337-3776. Isaiah Collier hanging out in studio with us this hour. And this text says, tough toenails, little eight. Yeah, it's a Texas fan not showing a lot of emotion. See, when you go to the old person, non-swearing kind of swears, I think that's extra hateful. Tough toenails? Who says that?
Daggummit.
Yeah, right?
That's a good one.
Dagnabbit.
Egads.
Tough.
What is that?
Toenails?
It's an old school F-bomb.
Yeah. Okay.
Egads.
You know what? Egads is old.
My big papa never said that.
Is that what you called your granddad?
Yeah.
Big papa?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Big papa, big mama.
Drat. That's another one.
Yeah. One of the ones, I don't know that this would count as the same thing. On the positive side, though, I always hated cool beans. I never understood.
Those people are the worst.
They gave me shivers. Cool beans. Cool beans.
That sounds like something you'd say.
Cool beans? Me?
Yes.
Oh, no. No, that's past the boundary line. I try to stay cooler than cool beans.
When you go super Waxahachie and you are trying to mind the cussing, I could hear you saying cool, but you probably tried it out a couple of times before realizing just how dorky it was.
That may or may not be true. That may or may not be true. All right. Isaiah's hanging in studio with us, and we'll talk about a lot of different things, but we do want to get his perspective on the NBA draft. Isaiah follows the NBA very closely, follows college basketball, and there's probably going to be a Longhorn drafted, probably a one for sure, and then we got to ask him about these other two names of does he think maybe we have three Longhorns drafted, or is it more than that in tonight's NBA draft? Let's get into that discussion. Also, before the hour's done in the crap bag, Dak Prescott with an injury. Good news, Cowboy fans, is it is upper body. It is not any kind of re-injuring of a lower body situation, but it's still Dak Prescott and an injury. We'll try to clarify everything, and we'll replay our interview with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, get you a national perspective on Texas, Oklahoma, the SEC, and the landscape of college football. Glad you're with us on a Thursday. It's The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Challenged by Travis to die. By the line that he drew with his sword when the battle was nigh. Any man that will fight to the death cross over, but if you want to live, you better fly. And over the line went 179.
Biggest compliment I can give Johnny Cash, and I can give him a lot of them. Johnny Cash could take an idea that in anyone else's hands would be suicide and make it livable. I don't know how he did it. You pick any other artist that's ever existed and give me this idea, I'd say, oh, that's silly. That would never work. I bet this sold. People bought this.
You know who else did it that I guarantee it does not come off as good?
Who?
George Strait.
There's no way. There's no chance. No way the king is pulling this off. There's no way. All right, why are you playing Johnny Cash, Trey?
It is Shameless Podcast Promotion Thursday, Chad. New episode of Books on Pod is out now with Chris Tomlinson. He is a columnist for the Houston Chronicle and San Antonio Express News and co-author of a book that has garnered some attention over the last month or so when they tried to discuss the book at the Bullock Museum, but it was stopped by Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick because the book makes the case that the Battle of the Alamo was not as heroic an endeavor as Texans have been led to believe for a long time, and that it was mostly spurred on by Mexico's attempts to stop Texans and Tejanos from engaging in slavery. Now, the state of Texas does not want this conversation to happen. I found the book fascinating. There were some points that I agreed with. There were some things that I learned. I don't completely agree with the argument being made as well, but it's important that we have these conversations, and I am doing so on booksonpod.com. The episode came out this morning. Highly recommend you check it out. We all went through Texas history a couple different times, second grade and seventh or eighth grade or whatever it was. And this is a slightly different version of that narrative, which has been blown up over the years. So I encourage you to check it out. Even if you disagree, there are times that I disagree with Tomlinson. I push back on him as well. I think it's well worth your time to check it out at booksonpod.com.
So you're keeping it light this week. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah, not controversial. Just keeping it nice and light. Booksonpod.com. So more Alamo stuff? Is that what I'm going to get today?
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how far we can go with the Alamo stuff.
Alamo-themed music. Somebody said Willie Nelson did a cover of that. He could pull that off.
Marty Robbins did. No, actually, he did Ballad of the Alamo. So oh, okay. I'm assuming that has a very similar sound to it.
There you go.
So I went to James Bowie High School. And that was kind of always a big thing with me. My dad's been coaching there for 31 years. Mm-hmm. So I was very drawn to his story of the Alamo, which
Bowie's backstory, this is something that they get into in the book. He was not this this crystal clean figure.
That's the thing. Mm. I never knew that until I got older. And I was like, oh, man, this leaves a sour taste in my mouth. Because, again, I love Bowie High School.
Mm-hmm.
But just knowing that James Bowie, like Trey said, wasn't a saint. He was more than just the knife.
A lot of guys who were coming
He was more than just the knife. That's a good way to say it.
A lot of guys who were coming to Texas who made names for themselves with the founding of this state and its break from Mexico and ending up in the hands of the United States, a lot of those guys were escaping other things. And that included Davy Crockett, by the way, who apparently preferred to go by David. David Crockett. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
David. Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Not the same at all. So do you guys think the world would be a different place, better, worse, or whatever, if they had just told us the truth in fifth grade? Just started telling us the truth in history class starting in, like, fifth grade.
I was ready for it.
You think the world would be a better place?
It depends on what the truth is that you're talking about.
I guess so. You're
I think right. there are different ideas that need to be shared about historical events versus allowing the victors to be the ones that write how something went down and what the ultimate outcome was.
Or is it better to have it happen like it happened to me and a lot of other people, which is you get to that college level class and you realize, oh my God, they weren't telling me all this in high school. And you're starting to fill in those gaps. I'm just arguing for should we fill in the gaps at an earlier age?
Yes.
For
absolutely.
Everybody. Right? Yeah.
Stop candy coating things. Stop telling false narratives. And I think that the narrative with the Alamo is somewhere in between where this book tries to place it, Forget the Alamo, and the story that has just been intensified by Walt Disney, by John Wayne, by Lyndon Baines Johnson, so many others over the years, where it turns into this unbelievable event because it's not to be believed, because the, you know, just the self-aggrandizing that goes into it unfortunately creates a skewed narrative as well. So the answer is somewhere in the middle, and I think we should do a better job of trying to teach truths versus teaching the narrative that allows us to feel better about ourselves.
All right, before we get to the NBA, now I have to ask the question because I feel like it's 2021. I proposed at the Alamo. Am I now going to be canceled, lose my job, and be ridiculed on social media? Am I going to get the Ryan Reynolds treatment? Is it Ryan Reynolds who had the wedding at the
Deadpool
plantation? Who was that? That was him and Blake Lively. They had a wedding at a southern plantation property, and that they still, you know, they still keep it up or whatever, and pictures got out of, oh, this is where the slave quarters were, and how dare they, and they apologized for getting married there.
Well,
I need to apologize for proposing at the Alamo now?
It depends, Chad. You're weirdly braggadocious off the air about how you still try to keep slaves at your house. So did you have your indentured servant bring you the engagement ring? Because if so, then yeah, you should be canceled for that one.
How dare you? How dare you? You really do not want to.
Isn't it fun firing these shots from this room today?
You really do want to just sit back and watch the world burn today. You're going Joker in the Dark Knight today. I like it. All right. Tonight is a big night in sports. The last version of the NBA draft. Now, remind me, Isaiah. Isaiah Collier, hanging with us this hour. Last year was the weird COVID-ish draft. Is that right? Was it virtual or did they actually go in person?
It was virtual.
Okay.
It was virtual.
I hated that because tonight's about not only dreams coming true, but I need to see the threads tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I need to see shoes that make no sense. I need to see cool suits, weird suits, colored suits, silver suits. I need to see all of that with the NBA draft. Before I get into any specifics, give me an overall thought on the draft. What are you excited about tonight going into the draft?
Well, every draft I'm excited, fellas. You know, again, you're starting your career. These are guys that are going to be in the league for 15 more years. You know, future of the league, like LeBron James, Kevin Durant, those guys aren't going to be around forever. So you see guys in this draft that have a lot of superstar potential. Like, I think the first three picks, all of those guys could end up in Springfield one day. And, you know, the rest of the draft is pretty thick also, because there are a lot of guys who, even though they're probably going to be role players, they're probably going to be, you know, when you're a role player and you're in the league 10 plus years, that's a great career. I don't care who you are. So I think there are a lot of guys like that in this draft, but just like every draft, there's your what ifs, your guys that are kind of questionable, the guys that you don't have much game film on, or guys that, you know, just straight up are raw, like, you know, a Greg Brown per se.
Right.
But even guys in who are projected in the top 14, the lottery, they're raw guys that are going to get selected that teams are kind of, you know, going to be wishing, you know, hoping that these guys pan out, because there are a lot of what ifs on, in this draft.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the Texas guys, the top two Texas guys, are seen as those raw, toolsy prospects. Do most mock drafts still have Kai Jones going somewhere near the end of the lottery, Greg Brown getting selected at the end of the first round, and Jericho Sims going in the second?
It's interesting because there's different drafts that have Kai going in the lottery around 12, 11, even 9. And then there's some that have him, you know, as high as 24, 22. So I think it just depends on, you know, how everybody else pans out and what the needs of these teams and
necessities. I'm seeing him here at 19 on this mock draft I'm looking at, and the only Longhorn in the first round.
I can't help but to think that NBA teams haven't started paying attention to other one-and-done big guys that have played in Texas. And I know Kai Jones technically was a two-year guy, but these guys who were very raw leaving Texas but had freakish athleticism, freakish size. Mo Bamba and Jackson Hayes are obviously the two guys you think about here. And they wonder if they're reaching a little bit too much by taking Kai Jones too early, because as fun as it was to watch him at times last year, there were some blatant moments that showed that he still had a lot of growing up to do to be a consistent player at the college level, much less the NBA level.
Right, and I think his best attribute right now is just his effort and hustle. Like, he's so athletic and he's so fast and he just has ridiculous, again, athleticism. But at the end of the day, like you said, he's very raw. There's some things that you see and you're like, wow, that's very questionable. I don't think I would have made that move right there. Or you could tell that hasn't played that much basketball throughout his career.
Yeah, because there were times this last year where he was an integral piece on the team, obviously, and he's setting up for an offensive set literally out of bounds on the baseline. And his teammates, because they see him open under the basket, they just assume that he's standing in bounds because that's what you do. But that's how new the game is to him. Yeah. That's not a common sense thing for him necessarily.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting. I think he's going to need to go to a team that's kind of developed. You know, I don't think he needs to go to a team full of, you know, 23-year-olds and 22-year-olds, guys who are trying to seek the next contract. That's not good for him. He needs, you know, a role model type of guy who's been in his 12, 13 year in the league that could show him the ropes, you know, because there's more to just hooping. You know, you got to find the right trainer. You got to find the right chef, you know, all those things that, you know, we're taking care of you or we're taking care of down here at the 40 acres. You're doing those things. So I think it was a good choice, you know, picking that clutch agency group that him and Jericho Sims are both with. That's LeBron and Rich Paul's agency. I think they do a good job at, you know, getting young players in and helping them understand the league more. But I do think Kai Jones, I think he'll benefit for a team that, you know, he'll be maybe the ninth, tenth man coming off the bench.
So we all know there's two rounds in the NBA draft. By the time we get done with this second round, what, 60 picks altogether, right, in the NBA draft, will Kai Jones, Jericho Sims, and Greg Brown all have a home at that point in your mind? Or will one of them maybe, you know, have to figure it out undrafted?
Yes. I think all three will be selected. Okay. I think Jericho Sims killed his combine, like absolutely dominated. I don't know if everybody's seen that video gone viral where his head is completely above the rim. Like, you can't teach that.
One of the best verticals they've ever had there.
It's ridiculous.
Right? Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And what he could do defensively, I think that's, you know, his best attribute coming into the league, because he could switch out on the guards, and that's all the league is for 82 games. Like, you're trying to conserve energy, so you're just switching. Like, nobody's hedging, nobody's doing anything, you know, out of the ordinary. It's, hey, we're going to switch the whole game. Hopefully you could contain this guy for 24 seconds. And whoever can do it the best is going to get the most minutes. So it just depends, right, just like Kai Jones, which team that he's going to end up on. But I think Jericho's a steal. I think Jericho is the most NBA ready out of Kai and Greg Brown, even though those guys might have a little bit more potential than Jericho in the long run.
I agree with that.
I'll take it a step further. He's going to end up being the best NBA player out of those three.
I wouldn't be surprised with that.
I fully believe that, and I'll be curious to see what happens with Matt Coleman over time, too. I don't think he gets selected tonight in the second round, but he should end up in a training camp somewhere, and he may end up surprising some people. He showed enough growth throughout his time at Texas. I think that he's more ready right now to be a quasi-regular contributor than either Kai Jones or Greg Brown. Greg Brown needs at least a little bit of time in the G League, and Kai Jones probably does too, because they need to be playing a higher level of basketball right now. Sitting at the end of a bench on an NBA roster, it may be a dream come true in one sense, but it's not going to help their basketball career out a whole lot.
Yeah, and Greg's so raw, man, but just like Jericho and Kai, his athleticism is out the roof, and he has a really promising jump shot. Like, his form is very pretty for his height and size. He just, you know, he obviously has to tinker with it a little bit, just like a lot of guys coming into the league, just because the game's so much faster. But Greg has all the intangibles to be a very good basketball player in the league for a very long time, but I agree with you, Trey. It's going to take him a little bit, and that's okay.
So the Rockets obviously select first. The Spurs are in the lottery this year, I believe. Do the Mavs have a first-round draft pick? Most of the time they do not.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
So what are you expecting out of Houston and San Antonio tonight?
Well, Houston's in an interesting situation because they're looking for a James Harden replacement, it seems like. Like, every mock draft you go to, you see Jalen Green being selected at the number two pick, which is very interesting because I love Evan Mobley. Like, the whole college basketball season, I was talking about Evan Mobley competing with Cade Cunningham for that number one spot, just because, you know, he has what people compare him to. They compare him to your boy Trey, Chris Bosh, and on the defensive end, Anthony Davis. But the thing with him is, people can't stand when you're not a rah-rah guy that's always getting hype and beating your chest and stuff. He's a quiet cat. Like, he's, you
got
know,
the Tim Duncan vibe.
Yeah, he has a very Tim Duncan vibe. Mm. And then when you have that type of vibe, people question your love for the game, which is absolutely bogus. But that's a thing for some reason. I think Evan Mobley, he could have a better NBA career than Cade Cunningham. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think he's going to slip to the Cavs because they have a lot of guards, so they don't need a guard. But Jalen Green does have superstar potential. Like, people compare him to Kobe Bryant. It's ridiculous with his athleticism, his shot. But just like a lot of these guys, he doesn't have much film. You know, he played in that G League, which they didn't play many games, and really just played a lot of high school ball. So he's an interesting selection. I know a lot of people like Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga, especially with what he did, taking his team to the championship and his leadership. But he doesn't necessarily have that superstar it factor to me like the, you know, first three selections that I think are going to be taken in this year's NBA draft.
Isaiah Collier hanging out in studio with us. Of course, you catch Isaiah every weekday morning with Bucky and Aaron. NBA draft is tonight. Easy to remember, 7 o'clock ESPN. Back to normal in an actual location. That will be fun to watch tonight. We'll see where those Longhorns end up. Looks like Kai Jones is going to be the first Longhorn off the board. Up next, it is the crap bag. Dak Prescott's got a little bit of an injury, so it's time once again to familiarize yourself, Cowboys fans, with your backup quarterback situation. I'm going to warn you now. Some of these names you've heard before. This is the horn.
Shirts and skins.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometimes between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as the answer to that roll.
All right, it's Alamo Day on the show, but not the way you think. Trey, is this, was this Croce?
Marty Robbins.
Marty Robbins. Dadgummit. Marty Robbins. Tell him why.
Ballad of the Alamo is the name of the song. It is Shameless Podcast Promotion Thursday. New episode of Books on Pod is out now. It's with Chris Tomlinson, who is a co-author of Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. This is a conversation that Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick are afraid to have. In my opinion, you need to have the most disagreeable conversations, because otherwise, Your attempts to totally silence the conversation is only going to turn more people on to it. Chris and his co-authors make some interesting points in this book. I don't agree with everything, though, so we hash it out. And you can hear that at booksonpod.com. I think the chat is well worth your time.
I'm sure it is. I'm going to tell my dad to check it out because he's a huge Texas history guy, and it's a book I think he'll be interested in getting into. By the way, Trey, during the break, the mayor of San Antonio texted me, and they want their key back. I'm not exactly sure what that means. But
the mayor of San Antonio may be more on board with this conversation than our state leadership is.
That could be good. All right, so more songs Alamo-related coming up. Isaiah Collier was nice enough to hang out in studio with us for this 12 o'clock hour. We'll get a couple more thoughts from him on the NBA draft, but I also want to get his thoughts on Mr. Prescott and maybe a couple other things in the crap bag. Let's go here. Dak Prescott's hurt. Come on.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. This is not a very developed story with Dak Prescott, but it is worth a mention. Dak Prescott strained his shoulder in practice, and at first they were talking about day by day. We'll see how it looks. But, Trey, today we're reading reports that it might be a week or two of camp for Dak Prescott, so not that he was going to play a ton in the Hall of Fame game coming up, but it would look like Dak Prescott may be unavailable for practice for a couple weeks.
Yeah, the speculation right now is a couple of weeks, Chad, which means that you get to put a lot of focus into who the backup quarterback should be, and that's an important battle regardless of Dak Prescott's health status. Yep. Because people looking at the three names right now shudder. I feel like one stands out from the other two, and that would be the former Texas Longhorn, then SMU Mustang, Garrett Gilbert, who over time has shown himself a capable professional. Yes, it has mostly been in some of these secondary spring leagues, but still, we saw something positive out of him on the Cowboys roster last year.
Right, and it was ultimately a loss, but it was a fight, pretty good fight that they put up. Isaiah, I want to ask you, what do your eyeballs tell you? If I say Garrett Gilbert feels like the best option, am I actually telling you who the best option is at backup quarterback, or am I just telling you he's the best of the garbage they've collected?
Well, I don't like to bash Garrett Gilbert too much because he is a 09 class member just like I.
There you go.
But this is tough. And I wouldn't look into Dak's injury too much. I know he got paid all that money. I know he just came off for the foot injury and surgery. But still, like Trey said, the quarterback backup, which is one of the greatest jobs in America. I think Garrett Gilbert could handle himself for a while. But once you get that film on him after a few weeks and you start becoming predictable, because that playbook won't expand much for Garrett Gilbert and whoever else is battling.
Yeah.
Who knows what this Dak injury can linger on, but hopefully it's not too serious, which I don't think it is. But if Garrett Gilbert's backing up, then I don't know.
See, I wonder, because Garrett Gilbert is a fairly quick study, and considering the talent that he has to throw the football around him, and I'm guessing the Cowboys would try and do more off of play action with him, especially if Zeke is coming into camp in much better shape than he has in these last couple of years. You can lean a little bit more on the ground game. Let him operate off of play action like what we see with Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. And those receivers on the outside, that's as talented a trio as exists in the NFL. It may not be as much a hardship for Garrett Gilbert. Look, they're not going to be as good as they would be with Dak Prescott, but I don't think the season is lost necessarily like it would be with, you know, Narducci or freaking Cooper Rush back there, right?
DiNucci,
sure.
Ben DiNucci, sure. Or Cooper Rush.
Whatever mobster-sounding last name he has, he's not a very good quarterback at the NFL level.
To me, it's both at the same time. It is that Garrett Gilbert, to me, is the best option, and it's that they're not great at that position. They haven't respected that position since maybe Bernie Kosar. So Cooper Rush, to me, can't be the guy. And in this NFL, you got to have a guy that can give you a couple wins if you need, and you know, I keep going back to, I was probably one of 12 people in this country that watched the AAF, and I kind of dug that Orlando team he was on, and he showed me that he had a pretty good read of balls down the field. He pushed the ball down the field a little better. He had some deep ball accuracy that I hadn't seen from Garrett Gilbert, And obviously I hadn't seen him in a while at that point, and that's in that league, and you have to compare it. But I'd be interested to see what he would have. What will really disturb me, Isaiah, is if at the end of this, right now this depth chart in front of me says Cooper Rush is the fourth string. It will terrify me as a Cowboys fan if Cooper Rush ends up as the backup of this team. Because that tells me Garrett Gilbert did not step up to grab that job, and DiNucci's got to be even better, got to find a way to be better than Cooper Rush. If Cooper Rush is your best option, you need to go to the option store.
Oh, man. Backup quarterbacks. Who is the best backup quarterback of all time? Is it Doug Flutie?
Of all time?
Patrick?
All time.
Steve Young? Well, maybe.
Yeah.
If you're going to be technical, that's the guy. No, if you're going to be technical, or if it's not him, yeah. It's Steve Bono, who was on the same damn team as a third stringer, maybe. But yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
Kirk Warner. Kirk Warner was a backup.
Brett Favre in Atlanta.
Brett Favre in Atlanta. That may be your answer. So keep an eye on Dak. He may be out for a little while there. Shoulder strain. It is the throwing shoulder, if I didn't say that. Also, congratulations to one of our Olympians. Everybody's been talking about Simone Biles, but one of her teammates ends up winning the all-around gold medal. Congrats to Sunisa Lee. She's the fifth straight American women's gymnast to win the all-around title. So congrats to her. All right, Isaiah, before you get out of here for the day, we appreciate you hanging out an extra hour with us.
Yeah, fellas, thanks for having me.
So we talked about some of the Longhorn stuff in the NBA draft. Is Cunningham the lockdown number one choice for Detroit for you? Do they need to take Cade Cunningham and just not think about anything?
Yeah, you got to take him. For what the league is now, you see guys like Luka. And, you know, it's kind of like guys who are LeBron James proteges, now that LeBron's getting older, guys who looked up to him are starting to be drafted. Like Luka. I just saw an interview with Cade Cunningham, and he was saying his, you know, wow moment in the NBA will be playing against LeBron James. So both of those guys play a lot like him, guys who have high IQs, really great passers, 6'8", 6'9", and that's what you're starting to see. Even Ben Simmons, I know he can't shoot, but he was selected number one because he had all those measurables. Mm-hmm. So you have to go with Cade Cunningham, and you build around him. And with a market like Detroit, they need him.
I see a lot of Kawhi Leonard and Cade Cunningham, too, just because he plays a very laid-back style, and he turns it on when he absolutely has to. But he's very effective at getting the most with the least amount of effort, I guess. But when he gets truly locked in, and we saw this throughout the last college basketball season, where he would be very quiet in the first half, and the second half, he would turn it on and lead his team to victory. So that's something to keep an eye on. The one other question I have for you about the NBA draft is Davion Mitchell is a dude that I think is going to be great as an NBA player. Where do you see him going tonight?
Well, I wish he was going in the top 10. He's starting to bounce back into, you know, 12s, 13s, maybe even out the lottery because of his age. He's 22, and me and Shadow.
Yeah, which
so
is ridiculous.
Old. So old. But again,
that's old.
They love these teenagers,
man.
It's like when you're a teenager, these GM's eyes just light up so much more. I don't get it. Like, let's get back to the time where, like, you remember David Robinson at Navy waited 2 years after he got drafted? Like,
yeah.
That would never happen in today's NBA. Which is sad, but that's just where we are. But Davion Mitchell, I'm with you, Trey. I think he's one of the most NBA-ready guys in the league, or in the draft. It's just he has everything, especially if he comes off the bench, especially if he goes on a team that, you know, can make the playoffs. If he, like Memphis, they want Josh Giddey out of Australia, which is like a 6'7 Ricky Rubio, and that's cute and all, but come on, Davion Mitchell, you got Ja Morant, you could put them in at the same time, like those, that would be amazing, but
he was a man among boys last year at the college level. I have no doubt that he's ready to contribute big time at the NBA level.
Dude, I didn't see many people take the ball from Cade Cunningham. He did.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
That shows how good defensively he is.
Dude, they're acting like he's Uncle Drew. They're acting like he looks like he's the Kyrie Irving character walking out there. Come on, man.
Yeah, it's just a different time. Like, I don't get it either.
I see him here at 13 in this mock draft. You're telling me that's too low. He doesn't need to drop that far.
Like I see him at 14 with Golden State. That'd be a steal with Golden State. That Golden
State. Can you
State's
imagine
praying,
if they get him?
They're praying that he falls that low.
Oh, that would be silly.
Because they could care less. They're on a 4-year span. Steph's only got about 4 years left. I think he's 33. Klay coming off the injury. Who knows how healthy he'd be? So they don't have much time. So they're in the win now mode, and he could definitely help them.
That is Isaiah Collier, kids. Catch him every weekday morning with Bucky and Aaron. He is the youth of that show, just like all the youth is going to be on display tonight at the NBA Draft. Thanks for hanging out with us, man. Have a good day.
Thanks, fellas. Y'all too.
Isaiah Collier, he's at AintThat_Zay on Twitter if you want to give him a follow. He might be reacting to, NBA Draft stuff tonight. 7 o'clock on ESPN. All right, coming up next, how about a national perspective on Texas and Oklahoma, maybe heading to the SEC. Looks like it's definitely headed that way. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, we were able to catch up with him yesterday. You'll hear his thoughts on it coming up on The Horn.